From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! The U.S. tells Israel to withdraw after it invades the West Bank and reoccupies the town of Beit Challah. A Native American man runs across the country in support of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And the father of one of the Columbine shooting victims is arrested at NRA headquarters. All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. and Britain have called on Israel to withdraw its troops from the Arab town of Beit Challah, which its forces invaded early yesterday in the first prolonged act of reoccupation in 11 months of Middle East fighting. The demand comes after Israeli officials indicated that their armed forces were settling in for an indefinite period, despite international warnings that the invasion would only worsen the conflict. The Israeli army quickly took control of the town center, including a Lutheran church and an orphanage with 45 Palestinian children, and imposed a curfew. Meanwhile, just 10 miles away, tens of thousands of Palestinians were in the streets of Ramallah for the funeral of Abu Ali Mustafa, the first PLO leader to be assassinated by Israel in this conflict. The head of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine was blown apart by Israeli helicopter missiles as he sat at his desk. Mustafa's assassination is one of more than 60 killings of Palestinian activists since the start of the uprising. We'll have more on this story in just a few minutes. Days before the official opening of the United Nations World Conference Against Racism, a crowd of around 7,000 delegates launched the NGO Race Forum, chanting "Free, Free Palestine," while some Arab and Palestinian delegates carried posters saying, "George W. Bush, Palestinian blood is on your hands." South African President Thabo Mbeki opened the NGO Forum by urging all nations to commit themselves to wiping out the legacy of racism, slavery, and colonialism, quote, that condemns billions across the globe to poverty and despair. A draft declaration before delegates at the NGO meeting urged the United Nations to accept that Israel was a discriminatory state and that Palestinians could resist occupation by any means. The document also demands Israel pay full compensation, effectively reparations, to Palestinians who are described as people living under a foreign military occupying power. The draft says, quote, "The Palestinian people are one such people currently enduring a colonialist discriminatory military occupation that violates their fundamental human right of self-determination." Meanwhile, the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan added his voice to those urging the U.S. to take part, saying it was an issue affecting all countries. The State Department said Monday Colin Powell would not attend the UN World Conference Against Racism because of offensive language about Israel in some texts, adding that the United States might boycott it altogether. The Reverend Jesse Jackson says he'll lead his own unofficial delegation. U.S. and British fighter jets yesterday attacked two targets in southern Iraq yesterday. The attack came one day after U.S. forces lost an unmanned reconnaissance aircraft, which Iraq says it shot down. U.S. officials claim that yesterday's attack was not directly related to that incident. Also yesterday, King Abdullah of Jordan and Russian President Vladimir Putin, meeting in Moscow, called for an end to the international isolation of Iraq, saying it would help stabilize the entire Middle East. Nelson Mandela has attacked Western countries for not doing enough to improve the living standards of the world's poorest children. The former South African president was speaking to BBC News Online in Johannesburg. Since he stepped down as South African president, he's been lobbying governments to do more for their children and will address a special session of the UN General Assembly next month. He said one of the tragedies we're facing is that of globalization, which has not addressed questions of poverty, of disease, of hunger, and of ignorance. Mandela also criticized the impact on children of international, quote, comprehensive sanctions imposed on rogue states, saying it is the leaders that should be targeted. Meanwhile, the Bush administration is engaged in a strenuous effort to influence the agenda of a special UN conference next month on the rights of children so that the session's final declaration does not appear to lend support for abortion counseling. While the U.S. approved the use of the phrase reproductive health rights under President Clinton, Bush administration officials are objecting. Some Muslim countries and the Vatican are also objecting. New York Democrat Congressmember Marilyn Maloney said, quote, "These people are just obsessed about abortion." She said abortion isn't mentioned anywhere in the document and that the phrase reproductive health services includes other matters like education about HIV and sexual relations. She contends the Bush administration is exporting, quote, "our internal debates over abortion into our foreign policy." Officials of the Alabama Supreme Court refused yesterday to allow a state representative to display a copy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech in the lobby of the court building in Montgomery. Earlier this month, Chief Justice Roy Moore installed a large sculpture of the Ten Commandments in the lobby without consulting the other eight Supreme Court justices. Chief Justice Moore, a white Republican, was elected to his post last year after vowing to display the Ten Commandments in a prominent place to acknowledge the supremacy of God as a basis of law. State Representative Alvin Holmes said last week he intends to display a copy of Dr. King's speech next to it. But when Holmes showed up with his display, about 50 supporters, guards locked the doors to the main lobby. The group left singing, "We Shall Overcome." Armed Australian Special Forces troops seized control of a Norwegian freighter crammed with sick and exhausted asylum seekers today after the ship's captain steered the vessel into Australian waters. A defiant Australian Prime Minister said the move signaled his government's determination to crack down on a wave of asylum seekers of mostly Middle East origin, but it triggered condemnation of a country that was built on immigration. International relations expert Glenn Barclay from the Australian National University told Reuters, "We're heading in the direction of a pariah state." Meanwhile, a spokesperson for the Norwegian-Swedish shipping company that the freighter will not leave Australian waters despite being told to turn around. The spokesperson said the captain of the freighter Tampa had ignored Australian government orders not to enter territorial waters because the health of the asylum seekers was rapidly deteriorating. Australia has refused entry to the ship since it rescued the mostly Afghan asylum seekers on Sunday from their sinking Indonesian fishing boat. Indonesia and Norway have also refused to accept the boat people. And this news from California. The U.S. Department of the Interior moved on Monday to make Fresno's municipal landfill a National Historic Landmark, but the move was trumped later that day by another designation. The dump is on the federal Superfund list. The National Park Service said the landfill's designation as a landmark was part of a movement to document the history of civil engineering in the United States. But when officials learned the landfill was on the Environmental Protection Agency's list for Superfund cleanup, the designation as a historic site was quickly rescinded. So Much Trouble in the World, Bob Marley and the Wailers from the CD Survival, here on Resistance Radio, Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. and Britain have called on Israel to withdraw its troops from the Arab town of Beit Jala, which Israeli forces invaded early yesterday in the first prolonged act of reoccupation since the start of the second Palestinian Intifada 11 months ago. During the tank operation, Israeli forces also shot dead a Palestinian policeman, whom Palestinian officials claim belonged to a guerrilla group. The demand comes after Israeli officials indicated that their armed forces were settling in for an indefinite period, despite international warnings that the invasion would only worsen the conflict. They're fortifying their positions last night as the army dug in. Barely 10 miles away, tens of thousands of Palestinians were on the streets of Ramallah for the funeral of Abu Ali Mustafa, the first PLO leader to be assassinated by Israel in this conflict. The double blow of the killing of a political leader, the 63-year-old head of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who was blown apart by Israeli helicopter missiles that he sat at his desk, and the Beit Jala invasion has seemingly demolished the already feeble chances of a diplomatic solution to the Israeli occupation in the near future. And a senior Israeli official claimed yesterday that the U.S. has not complained to Israel about the use of U.S.-made weapons against Palestinians. Arabs, including Arab Americans, have repeatedly objected to Israel's use of weapons supplied by the United States, especially in the assassination of leading Palestinians. They say Israel is violating the terms of the Arms Export Control Act, which limits the use of U.S. weapons to legitimate defensive purposes. We're joined on the telephone right now from Israel and the occupied territories by Dr. Galia Golan, a member of the elected executive of the Meretz Party, a leader of peace now, and a professor of political science at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. We're also joined by Abu Leila, who's head of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine in the West Bank. We'll begin with Abu Leila. Your response to the latest news right now from the area and the double blow of the killing of the head of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Abu Ali Mustafa, and the Beit Jala occupation by the Israeli forces.
Yes, I would like to remind everyone that in 1982, Ariel Sharon dragged Israel and the whole region, actually, the whole peoples of the region, into a war that turned out to be a prolonged struggle, which went on for 20 years and ended with a humiliating withdrawal of the Israeli army from the parts that it occupied in south of Lebanon. I think that he is now trying to repeat his criminal history. And as it is said, when history repeats itself, it does so once as a tragedy and the second time as a comedy. But this is a very tragic comedy, actually, and it is tragic for our people. It is tragic also for the Israeli people. And I hope that time has come to stop the so-called Gilo safety operation, because the operation of the safety of Galilee actually ended into a fiasco, and this time also it will end into a fiasco in spite of all the crimes committed, the assassinations, the assaults, the occupation, and the infiltration of Palestinian areas. This will not stop the struggle of our people for freedom, and it is time that the Israeli public, the Israeli people, and especially the Israeli peace supporters came out to tell Sharon flatly and clearly to stop the massacre. And it is also time for all peace-loving Americans to tell the Bush administration it is time actually to stop this involvement in such criminal attitudes, because the rockets that killed Abu Ali Mustafa yesterday were American-made rockets. The Apache helicopters were American-made. The 2,000 pounds bombs that bombarded the police headquarters in Gaza 3 or 4 days ago were also American-made. The F-16s are also like that. And it is time to stop this cover and this encouragement and actually this assistance to Israeli aggression against our people.
Dr. Galia Golan, your response to that as a member of the elected executive of the Meretz Party.
Well, I would prefer, in a sense, to answer as a leader of the peace movement, because we are the ones, I suspect, who've been most active and trying to activate both the political parties and the public on in general. In a call for an end to the violence, we've seen a gradual and very, very serious and as well tragic escalation of the violence in the region. Just the last example, which of course is the worst of it, where you have the assassination of a Palestinian leader, and then you have in response or in retaliation the shooting on a neighborhood in Jerusalem, and then you have the reoccupation, hopefully only temporary, but the reoccupation of Beit Jala and the occupied territories. It's a terrible situation, and I must say that the recent events, both the assassination of a very senior person, the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and the reoccupation of Beit Jala are way beyond anything that has been done even in retaliation here. And we've been protesting this as a very, very serious thing. Our concern is that these acts, which probably come in response more than anything else to domestic pressures on Sharon to do something, or as the expression here goes, let the army win. And I suspect that many of these activities are more for the sake of public opinion and calming public demand, rather than a genuine effort to stop terrorism, because it's quite clear that this isn't going to stop the terrorism. Every time you kill a Palestinian leader, you're inviting, of course, just more hatred and more trouble. And it's very clear to us that this isn't the answer. There is no military answer to the Intifada. The Intifada is, at least as I understand it, an uprising to gain freedom from the occupation. And the only way that we're going to have any resolution of this will be through negotiations. What we've been trying to do for the past 11 months is to call for an end to the violence, to get back to the negotiating table. We believe that the Mitchell Committee recommendations were a fairly solid basis on which to go forward. They called for a freeze of the building in the Israeli settlements in the occupied territories, which we feel is a very, very important point. And they called, of course, for a mutual ceasefire. And I think this is really the only direction we can go and hopefully get back to negotiations. Meanwhile, unfortunately, as I said, we have this escalation. It's getting worse and worse, and the general sense, of course, is that we're heading for all-out war. I don't think that's what Sharon wants, by the way. I don't think it's what he wants, and of course there are pressures on him, particularly from the United States, not to escalate. But as I said before, there's tremendous pressure from his own constituency, from the settlers in particular, to use all military means at his disposal. And gradually, just gradually, he's doing that, each time stepping up the methods that are being used. And as I said before, we feel in the peace movement, and I think a large part of the public nonetheless in Israel, that this isn't going to get us anywhere. Aside from the fact that it's simply wrong, and certainly these assassinations are wrong, it's also not going to solve anything. This simply isn't the answer.
As one of the leaders of Peace Now, I wanted to get your response to a paragraph in the New York Times that says, Israeli officials say that Mr. Zibri, known as Abu Ali Mustafa, was a sponsor of car bombings and other terrorist acts. Therefore, they said, he's a legitimate target in what they call their active self-defense, just like other Palestinians killed for the same reason and in much the same way in recent weeks. But Mr. Zibri, whose Arabic name can be rendered several ways in the West, was not just another missile on two legs, as suicide bombers have been called here, and that's in Beit Jala, West Bank. Your response to that?
Well, altogether, the idea of assassinations is abhorrent and wrong. In any case, whoever we're dealing with, it's one thing when you're sitting and you're being attacked and you're in a situation of shooting, mutual shooting, and so forth. It's quite another thing to go and target somebody in an assassination, which we've opposed all along. But in addition to that, we're talking here about the political leadership, which is, of course, what's innovative or new about this, and that is that it's taking on the political leadership of an organization. It's wrong, in my opinion, from every point of view, and certainly not called for and not justifiable. Even, of course, one of the things we've said here, simply in terms of Israeli self-interest, if nothing else, You're inviting political assassination. What are we going to do? Next, we're going to assassinate Arafat, or are we going to invite assassination of one of our own leaders? It's the whole spiral that's taking place is wrong. It's unjustified. But certainly political assassination from any point of view is unjustified.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves, but then we're going to come back, and I'll start by asking Abu Layla about the impact suicide bombers have had. We're talking with Dr. Galia Golan, who is a leader of Peace Now, professor of political science at Hebrew University, as well as Abu Layla, head of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine in the West Bank. You're listening to Democracy Now. We'll be back in a minute.